Chicago. This is Bruce Dumont with our Beyond the Beltway analysis of national politics, featuring occasional injections of rumor and innuendo, all offered up by our panel of political insiders, pundits, power brokers, public servants, professors, and most importantly, plain-speaking Americans from coast to coast. Tonight featuring commentary by Jack Amberg, Delmarie Cobb, Mike Miller, and Mark Witte. Our program tonight coming from our home base at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago, where our toll-free lines are open at 1-800-723-8289. 1-800-723-8289. If you'd like to email me a comment, it's brucedumont@museum.tv. You want to tweet me a comment, it's at Dumo, at D-U-M-O. And we have 393 days to go before we get to Election Day in next year, and counting it down, 393 days to go. And there's going to be another important election coming up shortly. We don't know exactly when, and that is the election for Speaker of the House, because Kevin McCarthy, the majority leader of the Republicans, who was the odds-on favorite to replace John Boehner, withdrew his campaign this week, stopped his campaign in the wake of some things that he said on the Sean Hannity show, which we will elaborate on, talking about the politicization of the Benghazi hearing. And there'll be more on that as the program unfolds this evening, because there was a major development in that case, in that matter, today. However, obviously people are lining up. They would like to be Daniel Webster, Republican from Florida, seems to be the favorite of the House Freedom Caucus. These are the 40 members of the caucus that at least the establishment Republicans believe are causing a lot of havoc in the House. And then the name of Paul Ryan, who was a longtime member of Congress from Wisconsin. He's the chairman of the Ways and Means Committee. He was the running mate for vice president with Mitt Romney last time at the presidential level. And he has emerged as someone reluctantly who may be forced or coerced into taking this position. And so we're going to begin by talking about who Paul Ryan is. We talked a lot about him when he was running for vice president, but we have a couple of economists here, and we want to talk about, he's the chairman of the House Ways and Means Committee. Why is that committee so important, and why would someone want to leave that committee, which is relatively sort of below the radar to the general public, and take on the high-visibility role as Speaker of the House? We'll start with Mike Miller.
It's probably the most powerful committee in all of Congress, because according to the Constitution, every tax bill must emanate from the House of Representatives. And to get onto the floor of the House, you have to go through Ways and Means. So we talk about the Bush tax. We talk about an Obama tax. Neither one can pass a tax. It has to go to Ways and Means first.
Mark Witte, has he been a good chairman? How would you measure his chairmanship?
I don't know if he's been a good chairman. He's certainly put forward a number of tax plans that were vague enough that they couldn't be credibly scored by, you know, the various folks that do that. But, you know, he's a thinker. He's certainly been somebody who's talked
what
about tax plans a lot.
What has he accomplished?
I think he's brought a lot of discussion to things like dynamic scoring and, yeah, just sort of fixing up the tax code.
Jack Amberg joins us. Jack, look at it from a political perspective as well. Is he a good commodity and a good representative of the Republican Party in Congress at this moment in time?
Well, I think he's got some challenges there, and so I might disagree with your word reluctant. I'm thinking that when he heard that there was an opening and they came asking him, the smart way to do that is to sit back and let them all come asking so he can then dictate to them, okay, I'll do that job, but this is what your role is going to be and this is what you're going to do. The challenge is going to be unifying. You've got the Freedom Caucus and the rest of the Republicans, and if you don't get it unified, you're not going to win anything in the future. So how does he do that?
Now, some members of the Freedom Caucus who have already announced a support of Daniel Webster of Florida, they have said that they want to give him a shot. Jason Chaffetz also has thrown his hat into the ring, but they say that he has got to meet their criteria. In other words, there has to be more transparency, more openness, and they like him personally, but he's got to come more than halfway to meet them as well? Or do you not think he has to do
No, that's absolutely where I was going with it. Jim Jordan, the head of the caucus, has said, hey, we're open to it. That's exactly the discussion you want to have, because everybody else is going, hey, please, will you vote for me? So then they can dictate to him, not from the position saying, if you want me to do this, then yes, we can have a conversation and create the compromise before you walk in.
Delmarie Cobb joins us. She's our card-carrying Democrat tonight. Delmarie, as a political commodity, you saw him, Paul Ryan, on the national stage when he was the vice presidential running mate, but if he were to decide to move forward on this, it seems to me it's something he can have if he wants to do it. How would he change or affect the image of the party in any way congressionally?
Well, I think people, for the most part, whether you're a Democrat or Republican, have a pretty good feel for him. I mean, I don't dislike him at all. He's a policy wonk, and that's what I think of, how I think of him, in terms of taxes and the economy and things like that. That's what he brought to the ticket when he ran as vice president. And
he's a Jack Kemp Republican.
Right.
And he worked with Jack Kemp.
And, you know, so I think he's not as political. He's taken politics out of this a little bit in terms of the public. Now, we don't know what's going on behind the scenes, but publicly it seems as though it's about they're going to him for what he can bring to them in helping their image. And I think he does help the image of the Republicans if he becomes the House Speaker.
Mike, your comment on that.
Oh, I agree. I think Ryan is a fine guy. But I'm thinking of the – if we wanted to think of the country – having the best leaders in the best positions we could, I think him being on Ways and Means is really important. I think he does a fine job there.
And I think that's why he's reluctant. I mean,
I agree.
He sees the power he has.
Right.
Why he's got power, why have a headache?
Right.
But,
and
again, but people but from
how
Chicago,
would
be the fallback?
Go ahead.
Who'd be the fallback on Ways and Means? I have no idea.
I don't know. That's the problem. And he is that good. I think he's an honest man, so I think if he says he has to go to his family and his family now supports him doing it, I believe that he actually had to do that first. It bothered him.
If you have an opportunity to be the Speaker of the House, which is third in line to be President of the United States, can you not be in a position to influence things that are happening in the Ways and Means, because I'm assuming that whoever becomes the new chairman is someone that probably gets along with Paul Ryan very well.
I agree. I'm going to actually use myself as an example. I'm currently, in my job at the university, I'm what is called an associate dean. Mm-hmm. I have no desire in this world to ever be a dean. You would think I'd have more power and so forth. Yeah. I'm perfectly suited for doing that job, and I wonder if Ryan is perfectly suited for doing House Ways and Means more so than the Speaker. And it would be better for the country if you had somebody of that quality in that position.
Delmarie?
And if you look at it, after the race for president, he could have stayed on the national stage in many ways,
right.
And he didn't. He went back
took himself out early for the race this
exactly.
year.
Exactly. And I think that's interesting, because it says something about him, and it speaks to what you just said about he's happy with what he's doing.
Right. Because at the national level in the nominating process, the Republican primary voters appear to be saying, we want change. We don't want anybody on the inside. And the establishment Republicans being fearful at least at the top two front runners, which we'll talk about later on. It seems to me that this is the collective power and influence of the entire Republican Party is now coming down on Paul Ryan, because Paul Ryan could emerge as sort of the adult in the room who knows what's going on, and he has a very important position, and it's a counterbalance against what the Republican primary voters may be doing when they go to the polls to nominate a president of the United States. On that note, we've got a pause with 1-800-723-8029. Your calls when we come back from Chicago.
Excuse me, Chad. Here is a flash from the Associated Press, Dateline Dallas. Two priests who were with President Kennedy say he is dead of bullet wounds.
It was a moment that defined American history. But what really happened in Dallas that day? And does that tragedy lead back to Chicago? A new play, Assassination Theater, answers that question. Now at the Museum of Broadcast Communications. For tickets, go to assassinationtheater.com.
The beauty of Amlink's interior landscape is that we can come in, work with your budget, and create a fit that makes sense for your facility at that time. Our goal is to create foliage designs that not only look incredible the day we put them in, but you can go back 2 years later and it is still maintained and has grown and is a perfect fit for that customer's environment.
Call Amlings now at 888-880-TREE. Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. Thanks very much for joining us. Mark Whitty, you were going to make a point about the mathematics and voting and the magic numbers here to become the speaker.
Well, I was kind of amazed to learn how this works, that, say, in the Senate, Mitch McConnell has no problem that he is chosen by, as the majority of the majority party, that as long as, you know, more than half the Republicans in the Senate like him, he's fine. Whereas in the House, the speaker is chosen by the House as a whole. And so you can figure if the Republicans are a majority, the Democrats are going to vote no on whoever they put forward. And so to win the speakership, that whoever it's going to be is going to have to get a supermajority of the Republicans, essentially all of them in the House, to vote their way. And with the Freedom Caucus, whatever, that's enough votes to, you know, combine with the Democrats, knock out anybody.
Mm-hmm. And again, so really the equivalent in the House to Mitch McConnell is Kevin McCarthy, who is the majority leader in the House of just Republicans. Mm-hmm. And there's no doubt that he would have done very well if it was just Republicans voting.
But if were the Senate rules, he'd be in like Flynn.
He would be okay. But Jack, you were going to make a point about
Mark's point is it compounds the challenge that the Republican Party has, that they've got to unify. They all have to get behind one guy or gal. And unify and support and stop, you know, backstabbing each other. I mean, that's what ends up happening. When you're talking about the Freedom Caucus and 40 congressmen unifying with the Democrats, you're not all on one sheet of paper. And that's the ultimate challenge, which is where I think Ryan may have sat back and said, hey, you come to me so I can dictate to you how this is going to work.
You also don't have to be a member of the House to be the Speaker of the House.
Correct. Yeah.
It's one of the fascinating things about being Speaker of the House.
Del Marie?
No, I'm learning something today because I didn't know that at all, that you didn't have to be a member of the House to be the Speaker of the House.
But some people, or at least maybe this was a rumor floated by Newt Gingrich, but some people said that Newt said that he'd be willing to maybe come back if that opportunity presented itself.
They called you Bruce?
Maybe figure some other ways to do it. But again, I think the challenge here is whether this is going to get hardball. At least on all the Sunday morning shows today, the general reaction was that, Representative Mike McCabe, Republican of South Carolina, he said, the country needs you. The party needs you, speaking about Paul Ryan, and went right to the head of the list for those who he could truly unite the party. And again, on some of the shows, they said there may be a handful of people that could truly unite the party, but certainly Paul Ryan is sort of the brand name that people are aware of. One of the other things that a big story related to the House of Representatives, and we're going to kind of switch gears and talk about the Democrats, is that a name that you perhaps have never, ever heard before in your life is suddenly going to be someone you're going to know a lot about. He is Bradley Podlyska, Major Bradley Podlyska, a Air Force Reserve officer. Once upon a time, he was on the House Benghazi Committee. And he has come out in an interview with CNN today. He has said that he left the position or something, was fired from the position because he wasn't given the freedom to explore all aspects of the Benghazi investigation. And he basically said that too much of the power and influence of that committee was being focused on Hillary Clinton at the exclusion of other roads to go down. So, again, it's the big story today. It is likely continued to be a big story. The Clinton campaign has already responded to it. But this is yet another lifeline thrown to the Hillary Clinton campaign. She, of course, has alleged for many, many months now that the Benghazi investigation was nothing more than a witch hunt. So, again, the political significance of this, Del Marie, and is it indeed the lifeline that I referenced?
No, I think it's a very good thing for Hillary Clinton to have happen, and certainly is a good thing to have happen right before the debate that's coming up on Tuesday.
And her testimony on the 22nd.
Exactly. And it goes to what, of course, she's been saying all along, and what was said, whether it was said on purpose or said by accident or just a bad choice of words, however Kevin McCarthy meant it, he certainly helped her as well. So to have these two things happen in a row are helpful to Hillary Clinton. And I think what else is helpful is that this guy having been there and being an investigator and now being fired for whatever reason he was fired. I mean, of course, they're saying that he wasn't fired for the reasons he said because right. he wanted to, the investigation to broaden and that it's got, it seemed to get stuck on the emails. And if, in fact, it was about everything else, why does it seem that we're stuck on the emails? We should be talking about other things related to it.
Jack, because he is a major in the United States Reserve, because he has identified himself as a Republican, and even on television today, he said he is going to vote for the Republican nominee for president, and he doesn't want Hillary Clinton to get elected. Mm. Those are the things he said today.
Sure.
I mean, he has provided an incredible ammunition to the Democrats, and because he has some Republican credentials, will he be more difficult for the Democrats to besmirch his reputation?
Well, so first of all, as a citizen, he's got every right to say all of that stuff. As a major, he can't have either red or blue, any of that, because he's sworn to obey the orders of the commander in chief. Mm-hmm. But what I would go back to is the comments when Secretary Clinton said, "Why does it matter?" And words to that effect in Congress. And yet she's vying to become the commander-in-chief, where she will make decisions that involve the lives and the blood of our youth, of this nation. That is very important, and it should matter. And it doesn't – every single life should matter in every single thing she does. And rather than be insubordinate, as she was in that – and I'm using that word, and I'm picking that, and you can hit me for it – but she was insubordinate and did not answer the questions, so nobody can find out what went wrong to prevent it from happening again. That is not
she
something
said,
like a commander-in-chief.
She said, let me follow up. She said, what difference does it
what
make?
What difference does it make?
Answer that question. What difference does it make?
It makes a ton of difference. If you don't know why the decisions were made that resulted in an ambassador of the United States of America being killed and the security detail, then you can't fix them and prevent that in the future. Second, you can't find the people who are responsible and hold them accountable. If you don't know what happened, if you continue to cover it up, you'll never know, and you can't get it right.
Has this become an issue, Mark Witte, of in the general public that it's there's enough finger pointing going back and forth right now, and what might have been a clear investigation of a legitimate issue has been the waters have been muddied now, and certainly Mr. Or Major Podlatski has significantly colored the water.
Well, the dogs have been hunting this trail for a long time and have found nothing. And it's a sort of thing
Which trail?
Well, the Benghazi trail, the email trail. But
really?
I think it's a sort of thing where politics ain't beanbag. And I think this is not something that has much salience for voters. That, you know, the classical notion is you're trying to woo the median voter. But I think modern political analysis says that it's turning out the base that's what matters. And I think that, you know, there's a lot of people who aren't going to vote for her. You know, even if they all go through and say, oh, it had nothing to do with her, it was something else. And a lot of people are going to vote for her even if it comes out that she said, yeah, Ambassador, go in there and don't bring guards or something.
Like Miller.
I guess, do you really think there's been nothing found with regard to the email issue?
I think nothing that, you know.
The fact that she had this server, and on this server was
I think it's insane what she did, but I think that in terms of Benghazi.
After she was supposed to turn it all over, mm-hmm. that it was shared with her lawyer and her staff, which don't have clearance.
And anybody else who happened to hack in.
It could easily been hacked into it. And somehow you think that's nothing?
No, I'm not saying that, but I'm saying the Benghazi stuff.
She's still a candidate.
Yeah, but I'm saying there's nothing that's come out with her particularly implicated in the disaster in Benghazi.
Because the same thing with Lois Lerner. She shut up, and now nobody's going to follow the fact that the government used the power of the IRS mm-hmm. to destroy or try to destroy the free speech of Americans. Mm-hmm. I would love to get to the bottom of this. They should give her immunity and have her come and tell mm-hmm. everything that she knows. But no, we aren't going to do this because mm-hmm. it's a witch hunt. Nonsense. Richard Nixon almost got impeached. He should have been mm-hmm. over exactly the same thing.
And General Petraeus, General Petraeus would have an interesting comment as he had three documents that he had handed to someone who, by the way, was a veteran herself, had been honorably discharged and a West Point graduate. And I get the whole affair thing, but they took him down for three documents marked confidential, below secret, below top secret.
Yep.
Completely destroyed him for that. Nothing is going on at this point.
But getting back to specifically what was alleged by the major, and I want to just kind of follow up on it, is if the general public is not comfortable with the specific or is not bought off or signed off mm-hmm. on what went wrong at Benghazi, Would you acknowledge, though, that the email story is a little more understandable for the general public? It's not who said what to whom. It's about someone who has a position of power, who has a private email and a private server, and on that server there is classified information. And now she can't say, what difference does it make to that?
And
that's
she's
a little
lied
bit. That's a little bit different.
Over
well, that's
and over.
that's where the political problems that she has now, in my view, are much more. The trail leads to the email much more than it does to Benghazi.
Well, and when we look at today having a 30-second attention span for the average American, I mean, that those studies have been done. When you tell the truth, it's on one end of a spectrum. The lie is on the other end of the spectrum. Now you've got them both, you end up in the middle. Well, how? At what point does a lie suddenly become the truth or the truth become a lie? People get confused, frustrated, and they dump. And I think that's to Mark's point. People are just looking at this like, I don't want to
Del
worry
Marie
about it anymore.
Well, I think to synthesize it to something that's understandable, it's been broken down to the emails.
Yes.
Everybody does emails, so everybody can understand emails. It's not resonating to a lot of people. It's resonating to those of us who are rabid in terms of politics, but it doesn't resonate in terms of ordinary people. People who are worried about a job, who are worried about health care, who are worried about making ends meet, how they're going to send their kids to school, can they keep their homes. They are not worried about whether or not she had a private email server. And I can tell you that from when they break down the polling, and especially in the African-American community. This is not resonating at all.
But this is an issue. This speaks to what Mark said. This is one of those issues that solidifies the basis on the left or right. It solidifies, let's say, the 90% of the voters who are going to be evenly divided, and it's that other percent that everybody's looking for. Back shortly from Chicago.
This is Larry King at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago. Tonight we've got a special guest for you to meet. What do you like to do as a kid?
I like to play baseball. I like to watch television.
What was your favorite sports team?
Sports team growing up was the St. Louis Cardinals.
What was your favorite vacation?
I think the vacation we went to New York City to the World's Fair. See Yankee Stadium.
Who was your childhood hero?
Childhood hero, probably Hopalong Cassidy.
What was your biggest fear growing up?
The biggest fear probably was that I would irritate my father.
What's the silliest thing you've ever done?
Irritated my father.
Give the gift of Larry King. Order your gift certificate now at museum.tv. That's museum.tv. Bruce Dubois back in Chicago. Thanks very much for joining us tonight. 1-800-723-8029. We've been talking amongst ourselves. If you're out there in radio land or television land, or if you're listening to this program and watching this program on the internet, by the way, this program, the radio and television, audio and video portion, each and every week can be found at beyondthebeltway.com. Beyondthebeltway.com. And again, if you miss it 1 week, again, we keep it there archived for many, many weeks to come. Beyondthebeltway.com. That's the place to find us. In addition to America's great talk radio stations from coast to coast, and of course, Sirius XM Satellite Radio 124, everybody listening to us on POTUS tonight. It's nice to hear from you. And 1-800-723-8289. Let's let our guests around the table now introduce themselves, and we begin with Mark Witte.
Hello, I'm Mark Witte. I am an economist at Northwestern University.
Jack Amberg.
Good evening. My name is Jack Amberg. As you've heard, I'm a Lieutenant Colonel, U.S. Army, retired, so I'm a veteran. I work for a veteran-owned and operated bank, and I'm certified to provide VA mortgages in all 50 states. That's what I do.
Del Marie Cobb.
I'm Del Marie Cobb, and I'm a political consultant here in Chicago for the Democratic Party.
And Mike Miller.
I'm an economist at DePaul for the past 36 years, and I wanted to have a quick hello to my two sons in Washington State, Dave and Jim.
Very good. We are now going to switch gears and continue our discussion of politics. Not switching gears, but we're going to talk more about the upcoming debate, the Democratic debate. They're finally going to have one. It's going to be in Las Vegas on Tuesday night on CNN. And CBS News today came out with their most recent polls. Let's take a look at their polling. And this is for the Democratic nomination for president. Hillary Clinton in first place at 46%. That's down just a point from the last time they took their survey. Bernie Sanders basically staying the same at 27%. Now, they put Joe Biden in this three-way, and he is up 1 point, and we'll talk about Biden in just a moment. Webb, O'Malley, and Chafee basically in asterisks at the moment, or hashtags. We're going to talk about the Republicans in just a moment, but Delmarie, as you look at the debate, with a huge lead like this, and with a debate coming up, why would Joe Biden not want to be involved in this debate?
Well, I don't know that he's made up his mind that he wants to run for president. And I think that's the biggest factor, is that he hasn't decided whether he wants to do this or not. And certainly to throw himself, I mean, they've changed the rules. All he has to do is jump in there, take part in the debate, and declare it the next day or sometime during the week. I mean, that is crazy. Because either you have rules or you don't. And since we were all talking about rules a few minutes ago, I think rules apply to everything. To every situation.
So he couldn't just automatically show up there?
Well, yeah, he could.
Okay, because here's for those who listen to the show, I have said for almost 6 weeks now, Joe Biden is running. I have been told that. Not that he's that this everything that's been happening for the last 6 weeks, I say it every Sunday night, Joe Biden is running for president of the United States. So he knows. Now, one thing is some of the polls, obviously this is a CBS poll, but I mean there's other polls that have him in a much more competitive position. If he gets in the debate, he can only sort of maybe go down from that particular point. But the other point is, if he were to show up as a surprise guest at the debate, I mean, he would steal the show.
He would.
Would he not?
Oh, he would. He would be the headlines. All the next day, of course.
Would he be the headline if he announced earlier in the day and didn't show up on the debate stage?
Well, I don't know. He would be the headline, but he would be a parenthetical headline, because the headline would still be the debate, because it would take place. But he would be a part of that. So every time they mention Hillary and Bernie, they would mention Biden. So he would get the same kind of equal attention that they were getting.
I want to ask a question based on a story that has come out since we were last together, and that is that some are suggesting that Joe Biden himself was the source to Maureen Dowd's article, column, several months ago, which was a very poignant article. We had a whole program discussing it, that it was really almost a deathbed conversation with Beau Biden, his son, who urged him to run for president. And there was a lot of coverage of it. We had the head of the draft Biden movement, William Pierce, on this program, sitting in that very chair the night we had that discussion. Do you buy that? I mean, does the source of that story make any difference to the actual story? Because, again, it's Joe Biden telling a story to Maureen Dowd about what his late son allegedly said to him.
Well, I don't discount the possibility of that, but it's not important to me. If that's what happened, if this is calculated, whatever. This is politics. This is what happened. So I'm not going to spend a whole lot of time on that. You know, you do what you have to do if you're trying to get out there. And if he thought that that's what he had to do in order to have some consideration to form this what appears to be a draft Biden movement, then he did what he had to do. But we all know that once somebody gets in the race, you stop being the media darling. Yep. And then people start looking at you and peeling away the layers.
Right.
And that's what's going to happen. Yeah. And we all know that.
By the way, I was surprised that this became a big story last week, because when the story came out, That was my first impression. I mean, the only two people that were in that room when that conversation took place, one is deceased, and the other is the subject of a very flowery story by one of the most powerful political columnists of the United States, Jack.
And Bruce, let's remember, this is not Joe Biden's first rodeo. The guy's been in politics for many years. If that conversation happened, and let's just suppose it did, I do believe he would have promised his son, I'll do that. Now he'd step back and go, how do I make sure when I get in the race, I'm going to win it? Timing it after the debate, coming in as the knight in shining armor to save the entire party, that there could be an implosion during the debate. All kinds of things go wrong because real questions actually get asked. And next thing you know, Joe Biden's the savior.
Let me ask you this. Do the comments of Kevin McCarthy and Major Podolsky, I just said that they were, in my view, a lifeline to Hillary Clinton. Because Hillary now has this as her ammunition, does that factor into Joe Biden's decision as to whether or not he really believes that Hillary is as vulnerable politically as he obviously does or did 2 weeks ago?
Therein lies why he's waiting till after the debate. Let's see how she performs. And then he figures out, is he the knight in shining armor that saves it, or is he the true competitor that will seek to push everyone to a higher truth and a better candidate?
Del Murray, what do you think about that particular point? Is this the revelation, the whistleblower story today, is that another thing that Joe Biden should think about?
Well, I do think it's something else he should think about in all the things he's taking into consideration. Remember, he ran also in 2007,
right,
and he got 9,000 votes, I believe, nationwide.
Right.
So, and it was his second run for president. Right. So, I mean, like I said, all of those things come back to haunt you. The things that you've said, you know, the crazy grandfather kind of things that everybody talked about, is talking about now because they put them on the shelf, but they're going to bring them all out once he declares.
They'll talk about the Clarence Thomas hearings.
Right. We're going to hear all of that. No, and especially when you're talking about a woman candidate and the Clarence Thomas hearings, now you've got a whole nother brouhaha that will be very important to women voters. So, yes, I would say that the longer he takes, the less his chances are of doing it.
Mike Miller.
Yes?
Your thoughts. Well, make your thoughts, and then I want to follow up with you.
Joe Biden, of all the people in Washington, the one I'd love to have pizza and watch a Blackhawks game with, it's Joe Biden. I think the world of the man. Mm-hmm. He scares the heck out of me as being president, but I really adore the man himself. But I just wonder, might he know something is going down at the FBI?
Yes.
That they have uncovered some things which they simply cannot sit on, and that he's just going to wait till the FBI says, all right, we have all this. I'm afraid that we're going to have to indict or do something with
Senator
Clinton.
Then he's the white knight.
I think he has nothing to gain by coming in early. He has everything to win by waiting.
Mark, your comment on weigh in on Joe Biden as a commodity and the Machiavellian moves that may be going on here.
Well, I'm an advisor to Northwestern Student Government, and you can just sort of see some people, their dog's trained to hunt, they have to go for it. And he's famously somebody who doesn't have much of a filter, and he's been running for president his whole life.
Yeah,
and
he wants to be president.
But a Biden-Trump debate would be just an absolute beautiful thing.
Oh, the Super Bowl commercials wouldn't be close to that.
It would not be better than a Trump-Bernie Sanders debate. Oh, I would like that one better. Let me ask this question to you, Mike, because you're from Pennsylvania. You're from blue-collar Pennsylvania.
Yes, Pittsburgh.
And one of the appeals of Joe Biden is his blue-collar upbringing. Mm-hmm. Where he comes from, and bringing back some white ethnic voters who maybe have gone astray, some union voters that have gone to the Republican for the last several elections. Do you think that's a gettable demographic for any Democrat, even a Joe Biden?
I think it's possible. That's why I'm also a big fan of John Kasich, because he grew up, I think I mentioned on the show once before, 3 miles from where I grew up, in a hardscrabble suburb called McKees Rocks, which was always thought of as lower middle class at the highest. And Joe came from Scranton.
Yeah.
He is a genuine human being. I just think the world of him, except he scares me because he opens his mouth and you never know what's going to come out.
Yeah.
Why is it, by the way, I'm going to come back to Kasich. I want to come back and find out why Kasich is not connecting, because you would think that he would be connecting more than he is. But you say it's a gettable vote. Do you think it's a gettable vote? Can you get that vote, the white ethnic vote, back?
I can.
Blue-collar union guys.
I know. During the primary, you know, Hillary won Pennsylvania. She won Ohio. She won those states. So she beat Barack in 2007.
Okay. And
so
Biden could be a plus.
He could be a plus, but I think the Democrats can get that.
Okay, back shortly, 1-800-723-8289.
beauty of Amling's interior landscape is that we can come in, work with your budget, and create a fit that makes sense for your facility at that time. Our goal is to create foliage designs that not only look incredible the day we put them in, but you can go back 2 years later and it is still maintained and has grown as a perfect fit for that customer's environment.
Call Amlings now at 888-880-TREE.
Excuse me, Chet. Here is a flash from the Associated Press, Dateline Dallas. Two priests who were with President Kennedy say he is dead of bullet wounds.
It was a moment that defined American history. But what really happened in Dallas that day? And does that tragedy lead back to Chicago? A new play, Assassination Theater, answers that question. Now at the Museum of Broadcast Communications. For tickets, go to assassinationtheater.com.
Emails,
Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. And Delmer, you were making a point, which was important, about how the Democrats sort of need a fight, and you were saying, Mark.
Well, I was saying,
you guys need some action on your side of the aisle.
And I think that's why all the attention's been on the emails as well, because you have 15 candidates running on the Republican side, and so all the excitement is on the Republican side. There's not a whole lot of excitement on the Democratic side because you only have two candidates who are really getting any traction. I mean, we've got more than two candidates running, but only two are getting any traction, and so. That's why we've got him in terms of the media, and I know how we operate because as a reporter, you know, if we don't have a story, we're going to write a story anyway. And the story is right now the emails because there's not a whole lot of excitement.
Well, the other part of the story is you've got a 73-year-old socialist from Vermont who's drawing, you know, 20, 30, you know, 15, 18,000 people whenever he speaks. And he's doing very well. In fact, last month he raised more money than Hillary Clinton.
And I'm happy he's in the race. I'm supporting Hillary, but I'm happy he's in the race because I don't think we need a coronation. I think we need a primary, and I want a primary fight. And I don't care if Biden gets in the race. He's not going to be the white knight, but I don't care if he gets in the race because you need a primary fight because that makes you a better candidate.
Aren't you disturbed at how weak the bench is, though, on the Democratic side?
I don't think it's weak.
Oh, come on. You got two people.
That doesn't make it weak.
You have Hillary and...
But you got two strong people.
Well, let me see. Who else
Amy Klobuchar.
Have?
You got Elizabeth Warren.
Yes.
You got...
O'Malley, who's got an asterisk. And come on.
Let's talk about where the excitement has been thus far. And this is CBS Today came out with their poll for the Republican nomination. And this is a nationwide poll. Again, Trump at 27%. Ben Carson at 21%. That's down 2%. Ted Cruz is up 4% at 9%, along with Rubio is up 2%, but he's at 8%. And then you have Fiorina and Bush at 6%, and that's up 2 for Fiorina. And then the bottom half of the Republican field, Rand Paul, Christie, Huckabee, Kasich, and Santorum. And we were talking about, coming back to Kasich, Kasich is one of those that I said could be elected. And a lot of national news and media people have said that they think that on paper he looks like a terrific candidate. Governor of a state, you've got to win. But he's not connecting. Why?
I wish
why
I knew.
Why is he not connecting?
I don't know why. I thought for a second it could be because he's a very religious man. But so is Ben Carson, for heaven's sake. You see, I looked up his tax bill, and it's all about tithing. It's all about God and tithing. And when you look at Huckabee, he's an ordained minister. But I'm not sure. I don't get it. Americans, this is a man who really could defeat the Democrats handily. I just think if you combine him, Ohio, with Rubio, Florida,
that's
Republicans
it.
Walk into the presidency.
I would say that part of it is, I may get in trouble for what I'm about to say, but it is the 21st century. We live in a telegenic world.
Yeah, he's not.
And
he's not
an attractive telegenic candidate.
He's not.
Compared to Rubio, compared to others, he's not ready for primetime television, even though he would be a great and has been a great governor. And let me ask you this question, Del Marie. Explain to us, now again, you are a Democrat. You're a card-carrying Democrat. But you're African-American, for those listening around the country that may not know that on radio. You're African-American. What is the appeal of Ben Carson? And does Ben Carson have an appeal to the broad African-American community that could support him? Because the broad African-American numbers that you generally work with, I don't think are in the 21% that are going to vote in the Republican primary. What is his appeal in your view?
I think his appeal is probably just that he's an anti-candidate in that he's the same as everybody else's appeal right now. I mean, the reason Trump is doing well and others are doing well who aren't politicians, career politicians, and I think that's the appeal for him at this point. But I do think the more he talks, the more he's going to put his foot in his mouth, and he's going to get in trouble.
In some states, he's leading Hillary Clinton in one-on-one races.
I don't think that means anything right now, and I wouldn't put any stock in that.
You want to speak to Carson?
I absolutely do.
I don't see it.
Sure.
I have said I don't think Ben Carson is electable as president of the United States or even nominatable.
So let me ask this question. Have we finally gotten an American public potentially has gotten smarter? We've gotten so many and consultants and so on figuring out what are my talking points, how do I image, what color is my tie, and he's just standing there saying it like it is. Is that also what makes Trump attractive? I mean, the guy, frankly, sounds like somebody from New York. Oh, yeah, he is a guy from New York. And they're just saying it like it is.
And he wouldn't carry New York in a campaign for president.
I got it. But your question is, what's making them popular or not popular? We've got people who are not insiders, who are not career politicians doing this. I actually believe in my heart of hearts that the framers of the Constitution never intended for career politicians to do this.
But it's not just that they're outsiders. But again, leading the pack is a bombastic New Yorker. And in second place is a soft-spoken, a very soft-spoken, you know, brain surgeon.
The timing of Reagan saying, I paid for this microphone, I'm going to use it, don't turn it off, was amazing when we look at what happened with Reagan.
Also think of his story, though. He came from nothing in Detroit.
It's
a phenomenal story. And he's a religious man. He's a decent man. I just wish he'd run for governor or something first, and then he can run for president.
Quick question. It's a story that plays well with Republican primaries. Yes. My question back to you. Is his personal story, if he ended up with a Republican nomination, would he be a formidable challenger to the Democrat?
I can't tell you. I wouldn't be able to tell you. I think he has a great story. I've known of Ben Carson for years, and I've always liked him. Because he's a great neurosurgeon. He's outstanding. But I don't know that he would play necessarily and that African Americans would cross over and vote for him.
Okay. On that note, we are going to pause. For those listening to us on radio, we have another full hour coming up, 1-800-723-8029. Next hour, we're going to be talking about Syria, foreign policy, and the economy. And if you're watching us on television, we'll see you next week. Except if you're watching us on the World Wide Web, keep going. Go right where you are. Go out and get some soft drinks. And we'll be back in about 10 minutes with the next hour of Beyond the Beltway.
Angeles, looking for the ideal place for you and your family to relax and enjoy yourselves? A place that combines a Four Diamond Hotel experience with a convenient location? It's the Hilton Los Angeles Universal City, just steps away from Universal Studios Hollywood, CityWalk, and NBC Studios. Just a short ride to the Hollywood Walk of Fame, TCL Chinese Theater, Warner Brothers, and other popular attractions. Enjoy spacious rooms offering breathtaking views and a world-class Las Vegas-style seafood and prime rib buffet every weekend and holidays. Share family fun and enjoy the oasis of the palm tree-lined pool and whirlpool. Relax in your own private poolside cabana with a cocktail or snack at your fingertips. Book your reservation today at HiltonUniversal.com or call 1-800-774-1500. The Hilton, Los Angeles, Universal City at HiltonUniversal.com. They let you be the star in Hollywood.
The beauty of Amlinks Interior Landscape is that we can come in, work with your budget, and create a fit that makes sense for your facility at that time. Our goal is to create foliage designs that not only look incredible the day we put them in, but you can go back 2 years later and it is still maintained and has grown as a perfect fit for that customer's environment.
Call Amlings now at 888-880-TREE.
Everyone loves vacationing in Florida. So why not experience it as it was meant to be? Where turquoise Gulf waters meet tranquil island beaches. Feel the powder-soft sand between your toes. Revel in a glorious island sunset. Shop the boutiques of a seaside village. Ride horseback along tranquil waters. This is Bradenton, Anna Maria Island, Longboat Key. Real, authentic Florida, where you can discover an intimate downtown and sip cappuccino at a sidewalk cafe. Catch fresh fish for dinner. Even tour a working winery. Just minutes from all the rest Florida has to offer. Bradenton, Anna Maria Island, Longboat Key. Plan your visit online at BradentonGulfIslands.com. That's BradentonGulfIslands.com.
Excuse me, Chet. Here is a flash from the Associated Press, Dateline Dallas. Two priests who were with President Kennedy say he is dead of bullet wounds.
It was a moment that defined American history. But what really happened in Dallas that day? And does that tragedy lead back to Chicago? A new play, Assassination Theater, answers that question. Now at the Museum of Broadcast Communications. For tickets, go to assassinationtheater.com. Live from Chicago, this is Bruce Dumont with our Beyond the Beltway analysis of national politics, featuring occasional injections of rumor and innuendo, all offered up by our panel of political insiders, pundits, power brokers, public servants, professors, and most importantly, plain-speaking Americans from coast to coast. Tonight, featuring commentary by Jack Amberg, Delmarie Cobb, Mike Miller, and Mark Witte. Our program tonight, coming from our home base at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago, where our toll-free lines are open at 1-800-723-8289. 1-800-723-8289. If you'd like to email me a comment, it's Bruce Dumont at museum.tv. If you want to tweet me a comment, it's at Dumo, at D-U-M-O. And if you'd like to join us on the World Wide Web, it is beyondthebeltway.com. Beyondthebeltway.com. And again, I should mention at the beginning of our broadcast, all those people that have been listening and watching on beyondthebeltway.com, you were able to hear and see the first hour of our broadcast this evening because we have just received notification that there was a satellite malfunction, and those that normally listen to this program on radio did not hear the brilliant comments that were made in the first hour of the broadcast. So we're going to pick up on that. We're not going to repeat it. But again, if you're listening around the country, and again, if you're listening on radio, on any one of America's great radio stations or Sirius XM satellite radio, hopefully you are now hearing this program because of the technical problem that we had. We were talking in hour number one, as we frequently do, about Donald Trump a little bit. And one of the points that I was making is that Donald Trump has the ability to change the subject very, very quickly, more so than maybe any other candidate, maybe with the exception of Hillary Clinton. But a couple of weeks ago, he got a lot of publicity about coming out with his tax plan, and we've got a couple of economists here this evening, so I want to get a sense from them. We'll start with our Republican guest, Mike Miller from DePaul University. What do you think of the Trump tax plan, and explain some of the high points to the audience, if you will.
I didn't know exactly how he was going to come out. He did say he was going to go after the rich, which he does. He has certain things in closing loopholes and trying to tax them more. He is flattening the number of progressive tax rates. So he has a 0, 10, 20, 25. The current high rate is 39.5. He's going to reduce some loopholes, which will deductions and so forth, cut out deductions at a certain point. He wants, of course, the thing that this country needs is economic growth. I know we have a very important social safety net. You can't pay for that if you don't have money. So one thing you absolutely have to have is economic growth. And I think that the current administration has been more concerned about income redistribution, not economic growth.
But the Trump plan gives that.
I think Trump is saying he's trying to unleash entrepreneurship. He's trying to make it such that people will work and keep what they earn, especially in the middle. And so if you looked at it, without knowing it's Trump, it's not necessarily a bad policy.
That is
it's a Republican policy.
That is the Republican economist. Yeah. And now we will have, I don't know if you want to identify yourself as a Democrat, but certainly we have a different economist from Northwestern and your perspective of the Trump tax plan and some of the things that Mike Miller just had to say.
Oh, I think I largely have to agree with Mike. It's very skeletal. It's very vague.
Yes.
But you know, my concern with it is that it gives up a lot of revenue and that you know, we have a revenue shortfall and that it's a long-run problem. And I'm not sure that the evidence on the tax code being much of an impetus to growth is pretty weak.
Especially around those, we're here two economists talking. We're going to get nerdy here in a moment. If you look at the empirical research, the difference between 39 and 35, there's almost no evidence that it affects the revenues that come in. The other thing is he argues that it is revenue neutral. Given his tax rates, I don't quite see it. I don't know how it could happen.
But this is not an outrageous plan.
It's nothing outrageous. The one thing that I think Mark would disagree with, or the Democrats might, he gets rid of the what we call on the Republican
state
side
tax.
the death tax. Mm-hmm. He would get rid of it completely. That death is not a taxable event. I understand the reasons why some people have such a thing. I think it's wrong. But so he wants to get rid of that. But he does want to. He does expect the rich to pay more.
Jack Amberg, I had also mentioned during the break that Trump has the ability, because of his money, he can hire some smart people. And he said that, you know, if he said recently, following an interview when he didn't know some of the leaders of the world that he would have to deal with, he said, "If I get this job, I will surround myself with the smartest people, and I will know I am a quick study. I'll be able to get up to speed on that." And I think when he came out with his tax plan, it was a good example of how when he gives a position, people react to it, just as when he came out with his position on immigration, which I don't think is a doable position, it really defined the playing field. Everyone had to react to his plan. So are you waiting for his foreign policy plan now?
It would be interesting because two points come up in my mind as he does things like that. Once he gets the discussion started, then he listens, and then he can find the smartest guy or gal. And we've all kind of talked about you want the president to be able to figure out who's the smartest guy or gal.
He said we created a mess in the Middle East. Would you agree with that?
I absolutely think right now we have a mess in the Middle East. There's absolutely no doubt in my mind. To the tax plan, though, I would toss to you, especially with what I'm doing now when I have to look at self-employed borrowers and try to figure out their income, simplify that thing. That thing is way too complicated.
Is this simple? Is his plan simple?
My perception is that it's simpler, but I would have to see, you know, what
devils
what it
in
looks
the
like
details.
Exactly right.
And there is one other big difference between, say, Trump from that personal perspective versus, say, Mr. Obama. Mr. Obama believes, and he's told us this, that he's the smartest man in the room. He knows more about foreign policy than his foreign policy advisors. He knows more about economics than his economic advisors. He said this. And Trump is one
like
who
Jimmy
is...
Like Jimmy Carter. That's
yeah,
what Jimmy Carter
Jimmy,
said.
He was very bright, but he also wasn't the smartest man in the room on every topic. I think I have to give credit to a person who is willing to say, I'm not afraid of smart people. I'm not afraid of smart people. If I could find somebody who can do something really well, I delegate. I let them do it. I let them charge ahead, make us all look good.
Del Marie, you've heard three others sort of respond to this. I want to get your sense, and not necessarily the specifics of the tax plan, but the way in which Trump has dominated the discussion of issues.
Well, I think a lot of that is just really media-driven in terms of the media are just so enthralled with him that no matter what he does, they are covering it. And even when he's disrespectful to media people, they are covering it. And so, I mean—
The base loves that.
Oh, exactly.
They love when you
exactly.
disrespect the media.
And the other part of that is the smartest person in the room piece. I think he thinks he's the smartest person in the room, and even if he says he doesn't, I mean, you can look at how he carries himself and what he's saying, just like when he went after Megan Fox. I mean, that's a prime example of someone who thinks that I'm the smartest person in the room, and you shouldn't question me. I mean, is it Kelly Fox? What is it?
Megan Kelly.
Kelly. I'm sorry, on Fox. Yes.
Yeah.
Well, you can see I don't look at Fox so often.
She is a Fox,
right? I know. No, I think she's a credible journalist,
she
and
is.
I think she had every right in the world to be angry, and I think she had every right in the world to question him and ask him the question that she did, and so did the other reporters who asked him hard questions that he also got insulted by and attacked them on.
Can he, in your view, can he be elected president?
No, I don't think so.
Do you think he can be elected president, Jack?
I think he could be elected president.
Mark Whitty?
I would have said, you know, if he did X, Y, and Z, he'd be a goner. He's done X, Y, and Z, and he keeps going. I don't know.
I can only hope he's not going to be elected president. I don't know what would happen.
And I haven't completely changed my mind, but I'm moving towards the position that maybe he could. 1-800-723-8289. It's a long way, 353 days until Election Day. Back shortly to Chicago.
Excuse me, Chet. Here is a flash from the Associated Press, Dateline Dallas. Two priests who were with President Kennedy say he is dead of bullet wounds.
It was a moment that defined American history. But what really happened in Dallas that day? And does that tragedy lead back to Chicago? A new play, Assassination Theater, answers that question. Now at the Museum of Broadcast Communications. For tickets, go to assassinationtheater.com.
The beauty of Amlinks Interior Landscape is that we can come in, work with your budget, and create a fit that makes sense for your facility at that time. Our goal is to create foliage designs that not only look incredible the day we put them in, but you can go back 2 years later and it is still maintained and has grown as a perfect fit for that customer's environment.
Call Amlinks now at 888-880-TREE. Stu Watt back in Chicago. Thanks very much for joining us. And Mark Whitty, you made an interesting comment during the break about the Trump factor. Now, you're a bright professorial Northwestern University economist, but share with the audience sort of the cultural, visceral reaction you have to Donald Trump.
Well, I know I should be digging through these tax plans and familiarizing myself
and
with various candidates.
And you'll be beaten up on campus when you go back on Tuesday.
But I know I should be like doing the hard stuff, reading the details. But yeah, just Trump is a very compelling character, and I just can't take my eyes away, even when I know I should be looking at something else.
Del Marie, does he have appeal in the black community? I asked you about Ben Carson.
Does Donald Trump have appeal in the black community? I mean, I would not – I have a different opinion of Donald Trump now than I had prior to him announcing he was running for president.
Explain the difference.
I liked him before as a business person. I thought he was a good business person. I liked him on his show. I do not like him now. There's nothing about his policies that I've heard that would make me have – I mean, in fact, as far as I'm concerned, I dismiss him. I listen to him because I need to, but I dismiss him in terms of being substantive.
Jack Amberg.
Well, what I find interesting about Donald Trump, and I'll go back to my comments on maybe the American people are getting smarter and they see past all these prepared comments, et cetera. He's calling it like it is. He sounds like a New Yorker and he just calls it like it is. Does that sound like he's unfiltered and so on?
But calling people
in the back have been.
But calling people idiots is not calling it like it is. I mean, that's just absolutely rude, and being rude and uncouth and all those things. I mean that's not appealing. I mean, we're already in a civilization where people are we're less and less civilized, and having someone like that raise it up to another level to make it acceptable. I mean, that's the last thing we need in this country.
Well, if we're going to raise it up, though, we can't be doing certain things in the Oval Office, all right, that President Bill Clinton did with Monica Lewinsky, and I don't want to hear about the definition of his, that was completely
uncouth.
First of all, what
would make you think I would think that was okay? There's nothing about that I thought was okay.
Everybody on the Democratic side supported him and
supporting him,
defense.
But that doesn't mean that you think
they
it's okay.
They condemned him. Many of them condemned him.
Many.
They were going to put on their knee pads. Come on.
Many of them condemned. But here's the point. Del Marie, you're talking about the world and the society that you would want, and maybe everyone around this table would want, and maybe a society that a lot of people listening and watching the show would want. It isn't necessarily the one society that we are living in right now. Now, you've made the point, does he take that lowest common denominator and raise it to a higher level, which I think is a valid analysis of what's going on. But since we're in a contest where anybody can vote that's registered, going after the lowest common denominator is not necessarily a formula for defeat.
No, I agree with you.
I mean, look at the success of Donald Trump. We can look at the Kardashians. We can be looking at texting and Facebooking and all these other stuff. And, all these things. I mean, society is different. Tweeting. I mean, this is a guy who's running his campaign by tweets.
Yes.
144 characters.
Yeah.
I want to weigh in on.
You said
you hope that he doesn't get elected.
I just don't know what he would do. There's no evidence from him running government as opposed to running in a private sector. There's this big push among – there has been in the past – a big push among academics to bring in deans who were from the corporate world, not from academic. And they get in there, and they, in most cases, they just completely it's complete failure because they don't understand the culture. And I'm not so sure that Donald Trump would understand. He has to negotiate with people to get things done. Now, he says he knows how to negotiate. He's a boss, and the boss often can say, no, you do X. And
I want to do a follow-up question to what I asked before when we were talking about Joe Biden, and that is the white male working class blue-collar union voter. Many of them are Democrats. A lot of them switched over with Ronald Reagan, became Reagan Republicans or Reagan Democrats. Then they became Republicans. And now the question is this a demographic group that in Pennsylvania and Ohio and some of the Rust Belt states where they could have an appeal, where Joe Biden could have an appeal? And I'm looking at this Republican field. And of that Republican field, I'm saying that Donald Trump, even though he is a multi-billionaire, may be the guy because of the rhetoric that he uses. He is the guy that could maybe go into a bar in Western Pennsylvania, mm-hmm. and sit down with the guys with the plaid shirts and the flannel shirts. Mm-hmm. And he, even though he's this billionaire with this incredible celebrity, he could sit down and have a beer with those guys. And my other point is, and John Kasich could do that.
Absolutely.
But I don't see Marco Rubio doing that.
I don't see Ted Cruz doing that.
And I don't see Carly Fiorina doing that.
No, I agree with you.
And remember, when you say the culture we live in, let's look at it internationally and the other folks, because even though we've made a deal with Iran, the leader of Iran has called, used derogatory names about President Obama, even though he just made a deal with him. Putin and other folks of strength have called him an idiot. So if we've got a president going in who will use that terminology back and stand up to them. Remember, these are alpha males. They need, frankly, for somebody to kick them in the tail and say, no, I'm in charge. And this is how it's going to be done.
So you would like to attend the first conversation between Donald Trump and Vladimir Putin?
That would be a
blast.
You'd like to
be a fly on the wall on that one.
Absolutely, I think everybody would like to see that.
That's a pay-per-view.
That would be a discussion.
And the national debt would pay off the national debt.
I would like the analysis of the body language when it's all done.
What, Jack, while we're talking to you, because of your military background, you're a graduate of West Point, Lieutenant Colonel, United States Army for many, many years. Give us your assessment of the U.S. situation in Syria today in context with Russians now a high visibility involvement in that area.
I think there may be a perfect storm brewing for a whole lot worse. When I say that, I mean Putin is already bombing, and he has bombed folks that were on Assad's side, who we were against because we were supporting certain rebels who were trying to take down President Assad. At the same time, parallel to that, Putin moved into Ukraine and continues to occupy portions of Ukraine, and he's not moving out. He has already published that he wants to reestablish the Soviet Union as a superpower. He seems to be doing that, and we seem to be on a path that is directly conflicting. So how do we solve that? Remember that the levers that the different power, leaders of nations have, diplomacy, information, military, and economics are the only levers they have to make these decisions or to affect the decisions of the other guy.
Mark Witte, where do you...
Well, it's great that Putin wants his own Afghanistan,
right?
But not on his lawn, but far away. And I mean, you talk about the economics. What is Russia's economy? It's a petrostate.
Yeah.
The cost of oil, the price of oil is really low. They're hurting. He's looking for bread and circuses for the people of Russia. He's getting involved abroad because he can't fix the problems at home.
Is there any way he can fix the problems at home?
Not at this price of oil.
No, there's not enough money. I agree.
Let's not forget the natural gas he's piping into Europe, though. He's got Europe.
We have 250 years worth of natural gas in the U.S.
Well, we can't move it. We haven't put in the pipelines to move it. We can't help them with that.
Revenue's way down. It's trouble.
I guess my concern would be is if there is no economic vitality or viability that Russia has, and he is a man with great power and great ego, he has got to step up his foreign incursions, and he's got to step up his pump his chest strongly on the world stage to basically deflect and change the focus of the Russian citizens, turning away from the horrible lives they have.
That is a typical thing that happens to people like Putin. You do one of
Isn't
two things. You
Hitler
start a
did?
War overseas or you debase your money. You do one of those two things. That's how you buy off
was
the
Hitler
electorate.
In a similar circumstance?
No. No, I would think more of Argentina and a few other places like that. Where you would. But the interesting thing is we're talking about Putin, but I think that this could not have be occurring if the Obama administration had not made a complete hash of everything in the Middle East, of Libya, of Iraq, which was their beacon of look what we have done in Iraq, and then it completely fell apart. And then with Syria, they create the red line, and then they cross the red line, and nothing's done. I'm not saying that I know what to do, but this is what the president's supposed to do, and Putin would not be on the world stage had the Obama administration not completely made a mess of the Middle East.
Del Marie.
Well, we know that the situation we have in Syria with ISIS and ISIL, we know that that has to be somehow taken care of it or eliminated. And you would hope that the United States and Putin somehow would be working together, not working at odds, because that is the only way that this situation is going to get addressed.
Yeah, but what they're bombing, from my understanding, the Russians are bombing the people who are trying to overthrow Assad. I mean, it is a civil war.
Right.
And he's not in there trying to kill ISIL. He's trying to stop Assad from falling because he wants a puppet in that part of the world along with Iran. And so
the reason he's given is that he does not want the same thing to happen that happened when we got rid of Saddam Hussein and Osama bin Laden. Those are the same reasons he's given for why he's not getting rid of Assad and is trying to work with Assad.
Well, that was one of the controversial things that Donald Trump said recently, bringing Donald Trump back into the conversation, is that he said that, you know, going after, because he was very critical of the Bush foreign policy, he said going after, you know, Saddam Hussein and going after Gaddafi, in retrospect, might have been a mistake, and that it created the mess in the Middle East, and that maybe things would be better with them still in power.
Well,
I think there's a lot of Democrats that would agree with that. And the thing about Trump, and I keep coming back to it, the thing about Trump is he seems to be picking different issues that could appeal to different constituencies, and he's from this outrageous candidate who announced. He's becoming a little more reasonable as the weeks go by. Back shortly from Chicago.
This is Larry King at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago. Tonight we've got a special guest for you to meet. What do you like to do as a kid?
I like to play baseball. I like to watch television.
What was your favorite sports team?
Sports team growing up was the St. Louis Cardinals.
What was your favorite vacation?
I think the vacation we went to New York City to the World's Fair, see Yankee Stadium.
Who was your childhood hero?
Childhood hero, probably Hopalong Cassidy.
What was your biggest fear growing up?
My biggest fear probably was that I would irritate my father.
What's the silliest thing you've ever done?
Irritated my father.
Give the gift of Larry King. Order your gift certificate now at museum.tv. That's museum.tv. 1-800-723-8029. If you're listening out there, we'd love to test the phone phone lines and see if the folks out there in Radio Land are still with us because of some technical issues we had in our first hour of the broadcast. But going into the break, I was making the point that Donald Trump in recent weeks has sort of been able to sort of cherry pick issues that he's going to talk about. And some of them, I think, have some legs and maybe have some other constituencies out there that agree with them. And certainly his comments and his denunciation is too strong a word. His criticism of the Bush foreign policy, not only there are some Republicans that might agree with that, but certainly there's many Democrats that would agree with that. And that was a position that maybe some Democrats or independents might at least give Donald Trump a second look at. You made an interesting point during the break, so let's put it on the air about where some of those ideas are coming from.
Well, within both parties, there's long history of dispute about the degree of international involvement. You think of like William Jennings Bryan on the Democrat side and Taft on the Republican side saying, you know, our first job is at home and we shouldn't get involved abroad except in the clearest of circumstances. And certainly Rand Paul has been a leader on the Republican side with saying we're involved in crazy things that we shouldn't be involved in.
Right.
Yeah, and I agree with that. I would have some leanings towards Rand Paul's view. The trouble is we were already involved, and we knew that when we leave it was going to leave a vacuum in the Middle East, especially when you don't support Israel the way that the current administration doesn't seem to support Israel. And we're looking at what happens when you remove the U.S. as the power, that Putin could come in, that when you remove somebody like Gaddafi, who was a monster— but he did swear off of weapons of mass destruction. He was, in a sense, in our pocket, and we killed him. I just think that was such a terrible mistake, and Benghazi, of course, is part of that. And so I get Rand Paul's view, but there's got to be a way to work towards that, and I think we've done it poorly up till now.
And that's what Trump and Putin are both saying, in essence, is that the vacuum was created when you got rid of strong leadership that was there, indigenous leadership that was there. And what we're seeing happen wouldn't have happened had they stayed in place.
Yeah, and I've talked to Russians who have come over to the United States, and they say that Russia has to be led by a strong man. There's got to be a Putin that runs that country. Otherwise, you have chaos. And maybe in 25 or 30 or 40 years, they can have a democracy or a republic like we do. But in the meantime, you've got to have a strongman, and it seems like Iraq is the same way. Turkey is now going crazy. We see, 90 people were killed yesterday in a suicide bombing, and we don't know what's going on.
It was described today as Turkey's 9/11.
Yeah.
The figures are up to 100 now, but,
oh my gosh.
But again, that was – and then no one has taken credit for it, at least as of this moment. No one has taken credit for it. But again, Turkey's in a very combustible frame right now.
But it also has a strong man. Erdogan is a strong man.
Yes, he is a strong man. That's correct.
So when we look back, though, in time, and again, we talked at a break, Germany and Japan, you mentioned Hitler. He was a strong man. It takes a generation afterwards, though. To your point, you said 25 years. I think it takes longer than that to get those folks. And to your point, we are in a lot of places. We should only go to those places if we know as a nation it's good for our nation and the people there. Remember, we do want to fight and help them take control of their life. But we've got to have the guts, the backbone, the spine to stay until the job is done and not leave when it becomes uncomfortable.
Well, but you have to have politicians. Other than John McCain, you have to have politicians that are willing to say that. I mean,
but you've got to have the people have to tell the politicians what they say. Remember, the five freedoms in the Constitution, the fifth, is that right to ask your politician and to tell them what they're supposed to do.
But I think people are looking at the money that is being spent, that was being spent over there to the detriment of our own economy, and the numbers of people who were being killed, and I think that so the people did speak because the people decided they didn't want that.
But we have to understand that there's a counterfactual, as we call it in economics and in history. How many people would have been killed had the strong man still been in power, the monster that was Hussein and his two sons? Think of all the – there's a research group called the NBER, National Bureau of Economic Research, and one of the studies that came out of one of the groups that was working with them tried to figure out, is the welfare of the people of Iraq better or worse – welfare meaning their well-being – after the war, and this was done about 4 years ago, and they came out to the decision that it was better. In spite of all the monstrosities, you have to recognize that had we not stepped in, it could have been even worse for the people of Iraq. And they argue they're better off.
I want to follow up on something you said, because you talk about Germany and Japan and World War II and all the troops that were left there. And I said this, you know, years ago when the war in Iraq began and Afghanistan incursion as well, war as well, is historically, when America goes to war, it leaves a large number of troops there to keep the peace. And it was over 50 or 60 years in Korea and in Germany and in Japan. And what we have, at least, whether it is our leaders or the public doesn't have the stomach once a war goes bad or there isn't the big victory parade. They don't have the stomach to do the next thing that you need to ensure that they will not be back there again. And that is, you have to leave a force there. We have politicians, in this case it was the Obama administration, said, let's get the troops out. Let's take the troops out. I think most people would agree now that when the troops began to come out of Afghanistan, things started to go south there, and likewise the situation in Iraq. The absence of U.S. troops on the ground, and there's that term that no politician wants to use. Lindsey Graham is the only one that has talked about troops on the ground and the need for troops on the ground.
But the Iraqi government wanted us out, and the Bush folks negotiated that, so we were just following
what was agreed between these countries. But what I'm saying, though, is that sometimes a stronger leader would have had to explain to them that this is not the way it's going to be. And I think, and
to the point of the money, you're absolutely correct. It does cost a lot of money now. It's interesting. I believe it was MacArthur that helped write the Constitution in Japan. And I'm certain with the Marshall Plan in Europe, how much did the Marshall Plan cost us and what have we made back since then? Once you create that free market economy and that democratic republic, and I would go back to when you're fighting an insurgency, which is what we are fighting today, if you kill an insurgent, you grow too. To defeat an insurgency, you don't want that man or woman to become an insurgent in the first place. But if they can't get a job, if they can't be entrepreneurial, if they can't make money, their motivation, and I have classmates who worked with Petraeus on the surge, their motivation is to make their lot better in life. Whether that's more money, more land, more sheep, more women, more whatever their culture feels is important, if you don't give them the opportunity to do that on a fair level playing field, they're going to find another way to do it.
I want to switch gears and talk a little bit about the humanitarian crisis and the refugees. Where do we start with that situation? Is the United States in a position, as the president has now suggested, Del Murray, to take in 200,000 refugees from Syria? Is that a wise thing to do?
You know, I don't know what the magic number is for. I know what the president is saying, 200,000. I don't know if that's the magic number in terms of our economy being able to handle that many new people coming to this country. But certainly there's, as Americans, we always feel that there's an obligation for us to take in refugees, and we have always done it. And so we're doing it again. And when he first came out with a number, what, it was 10,000 or something
went
at first?
10,000 to 200,000.
And people were upset about that. So, you know, but I mean, again, I don't know what the...
I want to get, and I forgive me if this, I don't want to always keep coming back and mm-hmm. saying, how is this playing in the African-American community? Mm-hmm. But you know more about that than anybody at this table right now. With the unemployment rate in the African-American communities considerably higher than the national unemployment rate, how does the average black person on the street feel about these issues, that more and more people are coming to the country and they may be getting jobs that are not made available to African Americans?
Well, it is what's happening. I mean, it doesn't matter who it is that's coming right to the shores. It is what's happening, especially if people are coming over here with skills. Now, we know that not all of them have skills, but we know that some of them have skills that certainly are not there in the African-American community, and they will be offered jobs that African-Americans won't be offered. Because even if you look at the jobs that are coming to Chicago that Mayor Rahm Emanuel is bragging about all the time, those are not jobs that African-Americans are getting. Those are jobs that either these companies are bringing their own employees to Chicago from the suburbs. Now they're going to be in Chicago, but the same people have the jobs. And the few jobs that will be open, they're specialized jobs. They're IT jobs. They're other jobs. They're not jobs that suddenly somebody over in Inglewood is going to rush over to Krupp's Thiessen and get a job. Or they're going to rush over to ConAgra and get a job. Or they're going to rush over to Motorola and get a job. It's not going to happen.
Mike?
One issue I have about the – I'm a very big fan of legal immigration. I don't like illegal immigration. I keep hearing that the number of people coming who are refugees are families. But then when I see the data, my understanding is 80% of the people coming are young men. And doesn't that throw up a red flag from Syria? Doesn't it? Is anybody else concerned that maybe we aren't going to know who these people are? I guess I would be more than willing to open the door to all the women and children we could take in because that's just the way we are. But I do know what young men can do, and especially young men who maybe are on some kind of jihad, and that concerns me. And I just don't know. Why would they tell us it's families when, in fact, it's not families? It's
well, also last week we had a professor, again, from DePaul University who's done a lot of study for international refugees, and she was explaining that the procedure that's in place where they're checked out. There's background checks. I cannot comprehend how you do a background check on someone.
A refugee from Syria.
I don't.
And not 200,000.
It doesn't make sense to me. Back shortly from Chicago.
The beauty of Amling's interior landscape is that we can come in, work with your budget, and create a fit that makes sense for your facility at that time. Our goal is to create foliage designs that not only look incredible the day we put them in, but you can go back 2 years later and it is still maintained and has grown as a perfect fit for that customer's environment.
Call Amlings now at 888-880-TREE.
Excuse me, Chet. Here is a flash from the Associated Press, Dateline Dallas. Two priests who were with President Kennedy say he is dead of bullet wounds.
It was a moment that defined American history. But what really happened in Dallas that day? And does that tragedy lead back to Chicago? A new play, Assassination Theater, answers that question. Now at the Museum of Broadcast Communications. For tickets, go to assassinationtheater.com. So we're back in Chicago, and again, we've been talking about the refugees from Syria and the concern that I think everybody at this table has is how do you sort out those that may be coming here to be to do harm to the United States? And Donald Trump again has described it as this could be the Trojan horse to end all Trojan horses, and we're doing that. And one of the things that in our discussion last week on this program, we were talking about, everyone was basically saying that some of the Middle Eastern countries, primarily Saudi Arabia, they could be doing a lot more. I mean, certainly Turkey has done its share. Jordan has done its share. But some of the other countries, Qatar and some of the other countries in that area, but primarily Saudi Arabia being the largest, that they should do more. And I received an email from someone who listens to this program who is from Saudi Arabia. He's an American, but lives originally from Saudi Arabia. And he said, Bruce, he said, you know, the same concern that you have about bringing 200,000 Syrian refugees to the United States and putting them, spreading them throughout the country and wondering whether or not they are jihadists, as a Saudi Arabian, we have the same concerns. Only because of the religious conflict that is not necessarily apparent to most Americans, you bring the wrong Muslim into your country, whether it's a Sikh or a Shiite, you are creating problems. And so you're expecting Saudi Arabia to, again, especially in a time when some of the strong leadership and authoritarian leadership in that part of the world is being overthrown, you're asking us to take in 200,000 or more potential sworn enemies and jihadists into our country when they're maybe right next door to us? And that is not a perspective that I had thought about. And I thought
it makes
a very good point.
It does. In about a little over a month, I'm going to be going back to Bahrain, where I do all my economic research. I'll be teaching over there. And it is a Sunni-led monarchy with a Shia majority, one of the only few countries like that in the world. And that creates great tension. And if you take somebody who takes that belief even further, which is the Saudi situation, their Sunni Wahhabism is very, very strict, much more so than, say, Bahrain. And you try to put a bunch of Shia in there, this is a powder keg just waiting to explode on both sides because they don't like each other.
Jack?
I think you're absolutely right. The only thing that's crossing my mind, in the military, we would always talk about taking a racist, okay, and an African-American, you put them in a foxhole overnight. You force them to depend on each other, and all of a sudden they learn, oh, he's not that much different than me. His music may be different. His food may be different. But you know what? He's going to watch my back. I'm going to watch his. I don't know if that same thing can be done from a citizenship standpoint, but that's just what crosses my mind. If we can get these people to learn about it.
See, I don't think it can be done. You're describing, I think, from a cultural standpoint.
Yeah, I agree.
I don't think you can do that with a religious fervor. I think it's a different. I think it's apples and oranges. At least that's my take.
Yeah, and I also think, like in the U.S., I have no problem with more Muslims coming over here, as long as they're Muslims who want to be here and be Muslims and not try to either convert me or blow me up or whatever. That's all. Mm-hmm. Just like I wouldn't want a Christian to come over here and blow me up. In any case, but in many cases, the hatreds and the tribal problems go back so far and so long, and they are so
ingrained
right now that putting a bunch of Shia in Saudi could be a real disaster for Saudi. I can understand what they're doing.
Mark?
I do think that the Shia and Sunnis kind of know each other, so that's a hard one to put in a foxhole to advance on that. Yeah. You made the point about Bahrain being a Sunni-led Shia majority.
Mm-hmm.
That's Iraq was that as well.
And all the trouble you hear in Bahrain about the uprising, that is the Shia who want more representation in the lower house of parliament, and they want the better jobs because the jobs are being held for the Sunnis. And there are some real problems in terms of discrimination in that very small country.
But at the same time,
if you gave the Shia more control, they would remove all kinds of freedoms that exist in Bahrain.
In our few minutes left, I want to go back to Delmarie Cobb. And Delmarie, take a look at the debate coming up on Tuesday night, Democratic debate. What do the challengers to Hillary Clinton have to do, and what does Hillary Clinton have to do, and should they address Joe Biden at all?
Well, I don't think they should address Joe Biden in terms of them bringing it up, but I do think that the moderator certainly will bring it up. And I think Hillary will just hold her own. She's an excellent debater. We saw that when she ran for president before. And she will certainly hold her own. And, in fact, I'm sure she will make some inroads.
Do you think anybody is going to really go after her?
Oh, they may go. I mean, politely. I think they will, but politely. I mean, Bernie has said a couple of things already. I mean, they've been polite. They haven't been bad, but he certainly, I mean, today he said, she's taking my issues. So, I mean, even if he says that, that's still intimating that she's changing her views on issues that she had one position on at one time, and now she has another position on.
Yeah, I mean, she's flip-flopped and been against the administration.
She's evolving.
She's growing. Where she's at. growing. She's got to change.
Yeah, maybe some Democrats will now know how it feels to be a Republican, because every time we disagree with Mr. Obama, and there are very good philosophical reasons to do so, we're called racist. I've heard some Democrats complain that they attack Hillary and they're being called sexist. I relish that. I think that's wonderful.
Bruce, to your point, the moderator, I think the key to the Democratic debate being done well is that moderator stepping back. Take your blue and red off and ask some daggum tough questions and say, what would happen if he said? What would happen if she said?
Do what Fox did with the Republicans.
Absolutely. And because remember that they have the freedom of the press to be the watchdogs. Our framers of the Constitution were terrified of a government with power.
We'll see if Anderson Cooper rises to the occasion. Dana Bash rises to the occasion on Tuesday night. Everybody will be watching. We'll be discussing it next week. Our thanks to Delmarie Cobb and Jack Amber and Mark Whitty and Mike Miller from DePaul University for joining us tonight. It's just Mike Miller that's been from DePaul University. Our thanks to Colin Bobbitt and Dan Dorfman and Fritz Goldman for their assistance in the production of this program. Until next week, this has Bruce Dumont. Good night from Chicago.
Headed to Los Angeles, looking for the ideal place for you and your family to relax and enjoy yourselves? A place that combines a Four Diamond Hotel experience with a convenient location? It's the Hilton Los Angeles Universal City, just steps away from Universal Studios Hollywood, City Walk, and NBC Studios. Just a short ride to the Hollywood Walk of Fame, TCL Chinese Theater, Warner Brothers, and other popular attractions. Enjoy spacious rooms offering breathtaking views and a world-class Las Vegas-style seafood and prime rib buffet every weekend and holidays. Share family fun and enjoy the oasis of the palm tree-lined pool and whirlpool. Relax in your own private poolside cabana with a cocktail or snack at your fingertips. Book your reservation today at HiltonUniversal.com or call 1-800-774-1500. The Hilton, Los Angeles, Universal City. At HiltonUniversal.com, they let you be the star in Hollywood.
The beauty of Amlinks Interior Landscape is that we can come in, work with your budget, and create a fit that makes sense for your facility at that time. Our goal is to create foliage designs that not only look incredible the day we put them in, but you can go back 2 years later and it is still maintained and has grown is a perfect fit for that customer's environment.
Call Amlinks now at 888-880-TREE.
Everyone loves vacationing in Florida. So why not experience it as it was meant to be? Where turquoise Gulf waters meet tranquil island beaches. Feel the powder-soft sand between your toes. Revel in a glorious island sunset. Shop the boutiques of a seaside village. Ride horseback along tranquil waters. This is Bradenton, Anna Maria Island, Longboat Key. Real, authentic Florida, where you can discover an intimate downtown and sit cappuccino at a sidewalk cafe. Catch fresh fish for dinner. Even tour a working winery. Just minutes from all the rest Florida has to offer. Bradenton, Anna Maria Island, Longboat Key. Plan your visit online at BradentonGulfIslands.com. That's BradentonGulfIslands.com.
Excuse me, Chet. Here is a flash from the Associated Press, Dateline Dallas. Two priests who were with President Kennedy say he is dead of bullet wounds.
It was a moment that defined American history. But what really happened in Dallas that day? And does that tragedy lead back to Chicago? A new play, Assassination Theater, answers that question. Now at the Museum of Broadcast Communications. For tickets, go to assassinationtheater.com.